Hello, welcome to Roots Runners Rhizomes, radical health and healing from the underground. I'm Sarah Faulkner.
And I'm Lauren Jane Bruni.
Hey everybody, we're here in the studio today with Heather Martin.
Hello.
Hello.
Pleasure
Heather,
to be here.
Thank you. We're excited to have you here in the studio. Heather Martin, as many of you may know, is the host of WGXC's Medical Freedom Show, which is the second Monday of every month, same time slot as Roots Runners Rhizomes.
Oh, 2 to 3 p.m.
2 to 3 p.m. She is an activist for patients' rights, an advocate for medical freedom, and especially is active on behalf of pain patients.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm also the secretary of the National Pain Patients Coalition.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Great.
So, Heather, you want to tell us a little bit about what all that means for folks? What is medical freedom?
Okay, the show Medical Freedom, we talk about various medical issues, particularly access and patients' rights. I came to this subject based on my own experiences as the partner of a chronic pain patient and seeing the ordeal that he had to go through on an ongoing, still ongoing basis, and saw how this issue really dovetails with a lot of other issues that people are quite concerned with right now, like the pro-choice issue, the medical marijuana issue, the right to die issues. Mm. So many issues are tied into medical freedom. And there was a founding father early in the history of our country whose name was Dr. Benjamin Rush. And he was a signer of the Declaration of Independence. And he was speaking out at that time when they were making provisions for religious freedom, that there needed to be provisions made for medical freedom. Because he predicted that without provisions for medical freedom, that eventually the system of medicine would be set off to one particular class. Mm-hmm. And we would really be in a situation of a kind of tyranny, medical tyranny, because these provisions weren't made. And I think that's really where we are now, because we're at a point where people are in life and death situations and not having the power to get the medicines they need or to order the tests that they need. They have to go through this very regimented system.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it's kind of like self-determination and autonomy and the right to choose your own care, essentially. And then do you see that mostly around chronic pain? And
I see it all over. Okay. And I think awareness to these issues is even being heightened right now. Like, we had the Women's March, and we know that the pro-choice right to abortion issue is still very prominent. And, you know, I think of like Gloria Steinem with our bodies, ourselves. And our bodies really are ourselves. And if we don't have the right to make decisions for our bodies, how to medicate, how to be treated, how to really live within our own skins, that's really where the basis of freedom starts, is in owning your own body. If we're not allowed to make these decisions for our own body, then who is the owner of our bodies?
Right.
Is it the medical system? Is it the government? You know, who's really in charge here?
Yeah, it's amazing. And I mean, you don't even have the freedom to kill yourself if you're at the end of your life in a lot of pain. Medicine isn't even working for you. Your quality of life is terrible. But in this country, we still have many prohibitions against that, as if you didn't own your own body. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And then that issue gets complicated because, like, I was out in Washington a couple years ago.
Washington State?
Yes, Washington State, not D.C., the actual state of Washington, where they have created a means of doing that,
a means of assisted suicide.
However, the issue there comes up when somebody's cancer treatment maybe is not covered by the insurance, but their death is. And that was a situation that people, like in Washington, I think California is another state that has that.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the big issues, is it really a freedom of choice when you don't have access to the help, to a treatment but you can opt to end your life. And well, I'm from a medical freedom standpoint, I'm for that, having that choice.
Right.
It's also something that's got to be looked at in the bigger picture of, is it really a choice?
Yeah, and the decision-making that a person is going through shouldn't be influenced by anything but their own personal, ethical,
right.
If they have religious or whatever, you know, those
exactly.
are the only things weighing mm-hmm. on it, right? Not profit.
Another big issue and why we had to leave the state of Washington was when we got out there, we couldn't find any doctor who would take my partner on, being he was a chronic pain patient dependent on pain medicine.
Oh.
Too much of a liability.
Yeah, I guess so. And also the CDC regulations that came down, I think around 2012, 2013, in that time period, because it was in the spring of 2013 that we went out to Seattle, and really the had just hit the fan and no, there were pain doctors who were treating pain were just being shut down and run out of business and prosecuted and persecuted, and anyone still remaining didn't want to, yeah, like you say, take on that liability.
Sure.
It's similar to Lyme literate doctors, and sort of they right. have to choose how they operate and who they take on as patients because of regulations and insurance issues.
Right.
Yeah.
I think we
talked about that
a couple months ago, and how they're regulated, how many antibiotics they can prescribe.
Right.
Which
right.
really ties their hands for treating a disease like Lyme, which requires ongoing antibiotic treatment.
Yeah.
It's one of the few conditions that do, but
yeah. So tell us about some of the specific issues that pain patients deal with, and some of the challenges to advocacy for pain patients, both pain patients on behalf of themselves and a person like you who's advocating for a family member.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you hear so often from people who live in chronic pain, they're always being treated like a criminal. When they walk into a doctor's office with pain, immediately the focus becomes, are they an addict? Are they a drug seeker? Where law enforcement is put at a greater level of importance than the person's health. And the person probably is in extreme agony and in pain and has difficulty even communicating to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're being judged as a criminal.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Without any due process, of course. The medical personnel have to vet them and assume that they're criminals when they come in. That's part of their training. Here in New York, it's gotten even more difficult because they're really curtailing any prescriptions of pain medicine. The governor set some, was it 5 or 7 day limit for a prescription for acute pain. And I believe there's other complications even when a person has surgery. Like my partner just had surgery recently and got no additional pain medicine, even though he's had more minor surgeries before and had additional pain medicine and was on more medicine to begin with. And I think it's kind of like if anyone's ever seen the movie Reefer Madness, and it's familiar with that movie and just how it's so over the top.
Is that from the 1950s or it's earlier, is it? Or 1930s even?
Oh, it is an oldie.
It's black and white, that I can tell.
Yeah.
It's an old one.
Yeah.
Folks can maybe look it up on YouTube.
Maybe from the late 40s, 50s, somewhere around that era. But I really feel like we're in an era now of opioid madness. Because opiates are a natural medicine that humanity has coexisted with for thousands of years.
Yeah.
I mean, up until about 100 years ago, this was something that every housewife would have in her pantry, that every pharmacy would have as over-the-counter medicine.
Yeah, and so many of our plant friends contain a form of opioids, well, I guess I better not say on the air maybe now. I don't know. We don't know who's listening. But yeah, I mean, the ancient Egyptians, mm-hmm. there's, you know, opium poppy residues in
right.
their artifacts. Mm-hmm. And they practiced surgery, even brain mm-hmm. surgery, as far as I've read. And yeah.
Well, the opium poppy is a natural herbal medicine. And the opium is extracted from the sap of the plant. And it's got more than pain-relieving properties to it. And I think this is one of the real tragedies. Like, we're standing to lose pain medicine for the treatment of pain. But we've already lost opiates for the treatment of, say, diarrhea, for mm-hmm. the treatment of lung conditions. And you often hear about people with mental disorders who are taking opiates. I last year went to an event that focused on people in recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a mother there speaking about her son, and her son had some kind of mental disorder. It might have been bipolar. Mm-hmm. I think it was like a bipolar disorder. And she said that he tried all the medications from the doctors and he had very negative reactions to them. He didn't react well to the medicines they tried to prescribe, but he was using heroin. And she said when he was using the heroin when he was high, he was perfectly fine. He could be productive, he was sociable, but eventually, long story short, he died from the heroin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of the problems with opiates right now is the prohibition,
mm-hmm.
which is creating, just like when we had the alcohol prohibition, we had far more dangerous forms of alcohol than we have now. You had the stories of the moonshine that mm-hmm. people were going blind from. Now we have the, what's it, the crocodile heroin that's taking people's flesh off mm-hmm. when they inject it.
Mm.
That is not a property of opiates. That right. is something that comes up when you have a prohibition, when only criminals are in charge of the production of the substance.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's really harming people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why aren't they looking at somebody with a mental disorder who's using heroin, who's finding a strong benefit from it, and saying, okay, here's a medical breakthrough. Let's try to work with you. Let's get clean medicine for you. Let's right. work out a dosage that is going to work the best with your physiology.
Yeah.
Instead, we're stuck in this idea that this medicine is relegated only into this corner for pain relief and just throw out all of those other plant properties that mm-hmm. this medicine has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's helpful for people with irritable bowel syndrome
right.
and some of these digestive disorders that create a lot of where the digestive system really needs to be slowed down.
Mm-hmm.
That's where an opiate can be very effective.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I'm just thinking about sort of where there's like a moralizing component to these prohibitions. You know, another mm-hmm. type of very useful medicine is psilocybin mushrooms, hallucinogenic
yeah.
mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, folks may have read recently the wife of a very famous writer, Michael Chabon, who her name is totally escaping me now. I'm so sorry. But she recently was featured in a number of magazines and newspapers talking about her journey with depression and feeling that she had really resolved issues with microdoses of psilocybin mm-hmm. mushrooms. And there, you know, there's, so maybe folks saw that recently, but certainly there's quite a bit of clinical evidence out there for all the great healing properties of psychedelics. And yet it's prohibited for most laboratories even to perform experiments with them,
yeah.
you know, and study them, you know, mm-hmm. at this point. And, you know, where does this kind of decision come from? It seems like some sort of moralization about the fact that these medicines can also make you feel good or make mm-hmm. you have, you know, a situation where you feel empathy or insight into a situation.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Right. Yeah,
it is.
And yet, alcohol, you know, is totally, it's hardly regulated at all. And that just kind of makes, well, it doesn't help a lot of people's personalities in my experience. Some of them, you know.
But I think we're still much better off without the prohibition.
Right. Because it's the perfect example. Mm-hmm. When there was prohibition of alcohol, look at all the dangers that happened. Not to mention also people killing each other over, mm-hmm. you know, turf to sell the illegal alcohol.
It fuels the gangs. It does. And it gives criminals something to profit off of.
Right. There's so many layers to it. It's crazy. And we're not learning from the example we have of that. Why?
Right. And I think that it's because there's been a system set in place, maybe from the alcohol prohibition days. I think it even has its roots even earlier. I really feel that our problems in this country and our focus on prohibitions comes a lot from our unfortunate history with slavery. Because at a time in this country, certain people didn't have the right to own their own bodies, to own their own selves. So now we still have that kind of idea that there's a certain class that should rule, that should own a person's body. And maybe we've decided, well, that should be the educated, that should be the doctors. They should be able to make all of the decisions. But that's not really tenable, and it's not functional in a free society.
Yeah.
It strikes at our very core of freedom.
Yeah, absolutely.
These prohibitions have been used a lot to seize property, to raise revenues.
That's
in certain
right.
ways, even as they, it's a funny thing because as it costs money, you also, when you look at something that's costing money, well, where is that money going? It's
right.
going into the pocket of somebody or some group that stands to benefit from this.
Right.
In this case, it might be the court systems.
Right.
You know, when they seize a property, when they seize now a pharmacy or a doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go and they auction that property off. That becomes
That's
revenue.
Right.
And who's being employed to do that?
Right. Right. And of course, we've also heard stories about, you know, drugs that are seized, illegal drugs that are seized, disappearing from the warehouse. Where do they go? You know?
Of course.
So what other issues do pain patients face?
Well, right now the pain patients are really facing mainly the access to their medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So many people have been cut off of their medicine and they have limited time to try to find another doctor because that pain is going to increase and increase. And you know, some of the guests I've had on my show are doctors who have been treating pain. Had one fellow on in November, I think it's November, and he was talking about patients that he's lost to suicide, who've committed suicide because they were not able to get their medicine.
Right.
The when you probably heard about the veteran suicide rate jumping up a few years ago, that was a big news story.
Mm-hmm.
The detail that they left out of that news story all the time was that the VA had just taken a no more pain medicine stance, and that's when you had so many veterans kill themselves.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, in fact, my partner had to leave the VA system because they wouldn't work with him. They wouldn't keep him on a medicine that worked with his physiology.
Mm.
They had him on something that was giving him lots of bad reactions, and they wouldn't switch him back to the pills because they don't want pills that allows the patient to have some control over their dosage.
Oh, wow. What's the day-to-day experience like of a person living with chronic pain? Because it's not just the pain itself. It starts to affect systemically every body process, right?
Yeah. Now, because my work in advocacy for pain patients has put me in contact with a lot of people who are suffering from many different walks of life. I've met some people who are still athletic, but using pain medicine to pursue sports. Some people have been using pain medicine to hold down a job, to raise their family. So some people, it's a matter of they're still functioning.
Mm-hmm.
some people are bedridden. Mm-hmm. You know, some people, a lot of times you hear in the chronic pain community, they refer to spoon theory or spoonies. And the idea of a spoon theory is like if you are throwing a party and you want to have enough forks and you want to have enough spoons, but you don't have enough spoons mm-hmm. for all your guests. That's kind of like a metaphor for the lives of people who are in pain. They've got just so much to do in a day. They've got just so many spoons to do it with.
Yeah.
And they might reach a point where they're all out of spoons.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And so what does it look like for you being a pain patient advocate? I know you're saying that you do this for your partner, but is there a network of folks like you, or is it like family members and partners that take on that role for the people they're connected to? Or can you tell us more about
that? Well, sure. Actually, when we really were faced with really life devastating issues relating to the pain medicine, mm-hmm. like when we tried to leave the state and start a new life, that really got me looking online for other resources, for other groups. That's how I discovered the National Pain Patients Coalition.
Okay.
And I met Reverend Ronald Myers out of Mississippi. He was actually the first guest on my radio show back in August. And he's a doctor who was treating pain in Mississippi and ran into a lot of trouble for that, as many compassionate doctors have found. So that was one of the first groups that I discovered and became active with. And I became the secretary, and I'm like the New York contact person for the we're having in the end of April. The last week of April is National Pain Patients Advocacy Week. Mm. So through the group, I'll be organizing some rallies. Last year, we did them up at the Capitol in Albany and at Columbia Memorial Hospital in Hudson. We actually made the front page of the Register Star.
That's right. I remember.
Yeah, you remember that? With our signs out in front of the hospital. So we're probably going to do something like that again this year. Hopefully it might be a little bit bigger since we've been growing the group. I've actually seen, and a lot of people who are also pain patients, advocates, and activists have complained that the chronic pain community is hard to mobilize. Mm-hmm. And that's because so many people are bedridden with agony. Many of the people who suffer from chronic pain live well below the poverty level. They might not have access to the internet. They might not have access to even a cell phone, and they're shut up in their homes. And that's why it's hard to get their voices all together on this issue. However, I started to see how this is a far greater issue. This is an issue of medical freedom. That a person who has been on, say, a pain medicine for 10 or 20 years can't go to a doctor and say, hey, this is what works for me. This is the dosage that I'm comfortable at. This is where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And a patient doesn't have that right. They're seen as a drug seeker and a drug addict for knowing their own body and knowing what they need.
And is there any overlap with the disability justice movement? You know, there's like a lot of folks who deal with different issues in terms of chronic illness, chronic pain, differing abilities. And I know that that's, you know, gaining a lot of momentum and a good, nice force. And I'm just curious if there's any overlap there. Or
well, I'm hoping that there's going to be more overlap there. Some people who have been suffering have tried to submit complaints like to the Americans with Disabilities Act. And the people that I've known who have applied to this were really given a runaround. No, you have to send it to this address, that address. It didn't really get the kind of follow-up that one would expect or want to see. And I sort of question whether a lot of these organizations aren't just trying to uphold the attitude of the CDC while looking at other areas of discrimination. Because certainly so many people have been dropped by their doctors for being on pain medicine, have been turned away, have been refused treatment. The violations are out there. They're everywhere. And I would like to see more disability advocates and organizations that are paying attention to this really step up.
Yeah.
Like Human Rights Watch has even been one that I understand was collecting some information on it, but still, like, you know, we're waiting for something to happen.
Sure.
What would be, in your opinion, as an activist, some legal or social remedies, tangible remedies that you could think of that would improve the lives of chronic pain patients? Like, is this a matter of focusing on, say, insurance companies or the CDC or...
Well, yeah, know, the
who,
new...
Who, is, who are the obstacles,
CDC guidelines should really be put where they belong. Because it seems like as the nation is moving towards the legalization of cannabis and the acceptance of cannabis and the admission to all the lies that have been flying around about cannabis for so many decades, that now they're just simply replacing cannabis with opioids as the
new demon,
the demon drug.
Yeah, and we saw this right with when the prohibition against alcohol was lifted. That's when
Reefer
madness began.
That's when the reefer madness began. It's like they have to have this ongoing prohibition for the prohibition industry. So really, getting rid of the prohibition industry would be a great start. I'd like to see people who want to see women have reproductive rights, who want the availability of birth control, who want to be able to choose whether or not to vaccinate their child. I'd like to see all of these groups come together and realize we've got one thing in common. That's this medical freedom issue. You know, a person should be able to go to a pharmacy and buy whatever they want or need and go to a doctor to get the guidance that they want. As you hear so many times about people are going to a doctor, they're not given any guidance. The doctor says, oh, here's all the drugs, try them. Well, a person could do that if they had medical freedom and could go to a pharmacy. But a doctor should be using their knowledge and their expertise. So I really feel like medical freedom would help to balance that field so that patients and doctors could have more of an equal dialogue that I think would be a lot more meaningful and more informative. Because who knows a person's body better than the person who lives in it?
Yeah.
I believe that every person who owns a human body is the definitive expert in that body. But when you go to a doctor, you know, they want to go, oh, where's your medical training? How can you have an opinion about yourself? I am the expert. I will decide what you're going to have. And that is not a kind of dynamic we should be having with anyone.
We talk about that a lot with different practitioners and different, whether it's a patient or a practitioner. We talk about that with a lot of folks.
And it comes to consent issue, too.
Absolutely.
You know, when we're talking about consensual versus non-consensual actions on our bodies at all. Well, if you go to a doctor and they say, well, before we can give you the pain medicine that you've been on for the last 8 years that has helped you significantly, we're going to try all of these injections, which you don't want and you're afraid of and you've done the research on and you don't want going into your body. But that doctor forces you into that procedure. That is a physical violation.
And often that protocol that they're following is dictated by the CDC. Is that correct? Or the AMA?
Actually, it's interesting because I've heard that the injections that so many doctors are pushing on people are not even FDA approved. But they're trying to push these non-approved treatments on people because they don't want the liability of prescribing opioids. Now doctors and pharmacies are being looked at through a computer system. If they go above a certain quota, then they start having notices and inspections and audits, and they lose their practice.
Yeah. Well, it's just so mind-boggling to me to think about that, because then a patient's narrative and experience is not taken into account in our medical system.
Right.
And then, yeah, there's like such a loss of like interaction and history. But then someone can see an advertisement in a magazine or in the newspaper or on the television and go into their doctor's office and ask for that medication. Mm-hmm. And essentially it can just be given to them. I mean, it's like how it's set up these days where
certain medications, right?
Like these advertisements are all over the place and people are telling their doctors what medications they want versus the doctor sitting down with their patient and going over their history and hearing their story and experience and coming up with like a protocol that seems best. I mean, it's just so backwards to me.
And it's all based too on these abstractions of, you know, symptoms, and this pill is good for this symptom, and hello, we're in bodies that are organic biological processes that interact with our environment and other people and disease processes and the seasons and
our
all
spirits,
of those things, and to reduce all that to like
a symptom,
a chemical sort of cocktail, that's just bizarre.
And I guess there is some regulation that specifies that a pharmaceutical medication can only be marketed for one purpose.
Oh, right. Right. And then you have the off-label drugs. Like, I've known people who have a medical condition and their doctor will prescribe it even though it's not on, you know, approved by the FDA or recommended for that. But everyone knows that it actually works great for this. So, but then the insurance company doesn't want to pay for it because they're like, oh, well, this is only for non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, not rheumatoid arthritis. So, you know, what are you doing here? And it's crazy.
Right.
Yeah. Right. When the Affordable Care Act was being created, I was so hopeful that it was going to be an alternative to the insurance companies, but instead it just became a framework built around the insurance companies to keep them there, still doing all of the damage that they're doing, keeping the prices inflated, and force funneling customers to them. That's the problem I have with the Affordable Care Act. If it was really a national healthcare system and these insurance entities were out, I think we'd be in a much better process.
So what do you think about the times we're in now and moving forward?
Well, we live in very interesting times.
Sure do.
I have very mixed feelings about Trump, which are not entirely negative. One of the things that he's talked about is actually regulating the prices that Americans are paying for pharmaceuticals, because for a long time that's been something that our government has had no control over. In other countries, they're able to regulate the pharmaceutical costs, and people in the United States are paying more for pharmaceuticals than really anyone else in the world.
Right, like folks be going up to Canada on a bus.
Yeah, so I would really like to see the president do something about that.
Sure.
And I know he wants to change the Affordable Care Act, but I think he also does realize that if he just drops it, that people are going to be even more outraged than they are now. So I'm hoping that he does see a way to correct that, maybe to get those insurance companies out or to set some regulations to control this price gouging that has really made healthcare so unaffordable in the United States.
Yeah, it's currently actually illegal for an insurance company or Medicaid or Medicare to negotiate with a pharmaceutical company the price of the drug that they want to pay for it. Whereas in other countries, you know, that's why the consumer pays a lot less.
Wow.
Yeah, so I see we're kind of on a brink where we could make a lot of positive changes. There's also a lot of questions and
chaos can be fertile sometimes.
It can be.
Yeah.
It can be. I really wish that our president would focus on these issues and not his silly wall.
Yeah. Or Ivanka's department store.
Right.
Oh boy. Anyway. Well. I digress.
Right.
What other modalities do pain patients avail themselves of besides, say, opiate prescription drugs?
Well, it depends on the patient. Mm-hmm. Like right now, my partner is going through a series of surgeries mm-hmm. trying to reduce the pain.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, surgeons have told him he's not a candidate for surgery, but mm-hmm. he's done a lot of research on his own and has found a willing surgeon. Mm-hmm. And he had neck surgery and is doing pretty well on that recovery. So we're hopeful. It really depends on the person and on their physiology.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can totally replace opiate pain medicine with cannabis, mm-hmm. for example.
Mm-hmm.
That does not work for everyone.
Mm.
You know, it's not, whereas one person, it might be a painkiller for a lot of other people, it increases physical sensation.
Mm-hmm.
So for my partner, who had tried acupuncture, who had tried herbal medicines, who had tried diet, exercise, physical therapy, you name it, the only thing that would work for his pain is opiate-based pain medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So other people, I think a lot of people now are using surgery. And it's kind of an unfortunate situation when people are really being forced into surgery because they're going to lose their medicine.
Yeah.
I know, like, for my partner, he says, well, I'm not being forced. I really want the surgery. I want to get better. And he's very fortunate that there even is a surgical option for him. Uh-huh. A lot of people right. that I talk to in sure. chronic pain groups, there isn't a surgical option for them. For some of them, it's not a structural problem.
Right.
Some it's a nervous system or more of like a disease,
right.
not something that's just right. a yeah. nerve that can be moved.
Yeah, it's something metabolic or systemic issue.
Right. So, you know, the options vary from person to person. Some people are using one of the herbs that has opiates in it as well. I think it's a is it kratom or kratom?
Oh, kratom.
Oh, kratom,
yeah.
Which is still legal in the United States?
I think so. Yeah. There's been yeah. a lot of hullabaloo about that particular plant, which has helped a lot of people, uh-huh. and it's something that they can use instead of the opiates. It works more for people who are on the lower end of the opiate use because it contains less
mm-hmm.
of the mm-hmm. active ingredient than you would get from the poppies. But that's something that's also helping people. But really, the sap of the papaver, somniferum, poppy flower, is really one of our oldest and best herbal medicines. That, I mean, Pliny the Elder wrote about it in the ancient times. This is just something that is a part of humanity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it really is a part of humanity. And to say that all people who enjoy it or all people who use it are somehow wrong or somehow inferior, I get really frustrated with this bigotry against not only pain patients, but anyone who uses this. Anyone who uses yeah. heroin. I don't think that these people deserve to be looked down upon in our society or put down.
Yeah. Yeah, where does this come from, too, this kind of moralizing notion that people have about other people's suffering, you know, and
yeah.
whether it's pain or we see it sometimes, you know, people say, oh, just suck it up or, you know,
mm-hmm.
the sort of urge of some people to just not take seriously someone else's suffering or oppression or what, you know.
Yeah.
Where does that come from? Is that historically, especially around pain, is that historically maybe newer? Is it a Judeo-Christian thing? I'm thinking of the Bible, right? You know, women are supposed to suffer in childbirth and all this business. I mean, is that when we started judging?
Yeah, avoid that singing and dancing and too much smiling. You know, not good for the soul.
And then capitalism isolates us from one another. Right. So then you add that in.
Right. And it sees suffering as maybe another possibility to sell you something to sort of kind of a deal with it, but not completely eradicate it so that you keep buying things, right?
Right. And then there's that whole like power through mentality. Right.
Yeah. And then it's also sort of the making people into machines, like using the machine model for people, which again ties into the whole drugs for symptoms thing. Well, just add this drug and the machine will work, you know?
Right.
You know, oil change or take an antidepressant. It's kind of the same model, really, in a way. Yeah, it's really, I mean, I just, it would never occur to me personally if someone told me they were in pain, I would, I mean, how can you say, well, you know, I know better than you. You're not really suffering. What is that about? Right. But that's essentially what people are being told, you know.
You know, actually, that brings up another thing that, like you asked about the day-to-day experience of chronic pain patients. I often hear a lot from people who are suffering from chronic pain is that they're being heavily judged by their family members. So many of them, their own family is telling them that they're drug addicts, that they shouldn't be on their medicine, that they should get off the medicine, that this family member's got the treatment that's going to work for them. This family member's got another idea. And the people who are caught in the middle are, they just get so angry and so frustrated and so hurt because, I mean, a lot of people have lost their whole families just because they're in pain. And the family no longer wants to associate with them because the news media is telling them that anyone taking these pills from a doctor is a pillhead and a junkie. And if you've got a relative doing that, set them straight. And this makes it, that really compounds the problem for the chronic pain patients because they're losing that support from their family and friends. Who are buying into the madness and not listening to the individual and their experience.
Right. So how do we hear more of those stories, right, than just the stories of the other side of like, oh, these folks are just drug addicts and pill seekers and this and that. And that's where like advocacy comes in super strong. Do you tend to go to each doctor's appointment, things like that? Like, and do you find that, I can imagine the folks who do have an advocate in their life, their experience is much different than if they don't, right?
Right.
Well,
or no.
Well, having somebody in their life to support them, of course, is always going to be better than being totally alone. But as far as, you know, I'm not like a certified advocate, I'm not a lawyer, so my influence and power is very limited. I do accompany my partner to his medical appointments, and I generally record everything that happens there. But outside of really just being present and documenting and witnessing, now I wish I could do more. But the doctors, you know, they go, I've got to protect my end. There's these regulations. And we've had doctors even say, I know that's what you need. I wish I could do that, but I can't.
Wow.
And what's your, what's your experience like in terms of yourself being treated in the, in appointments? Like, how are you often received by the medical providers? Are they like, oh God, here's another advocate? Or is it more like friendly and fine? Or?
Like when I go with my partner, I kind of stay out of the way for the most part. You know, I try not to interfere with the process. I kind of just observe and witness.
Okay.
As far as my own experiences, like going to the doctors, they usually take a very authoritarian attitude. They don't want to hear about my observations about my own body or how I feel that I should be treated. And they want to do what they want to do. And they don't want to hear anything else. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a myself dealing with a chronic disease, tick-borne disease, and then also as a healthcare practitioner in my clientele, I work with a lot of folks who are either chronic pain patients or have an autoimmune disease or tick-borne disease. All of these being diseases where the subjective experience, internal experience of the patient is really, it doesn't necessarily match with our external appearance. And I think this is something that in terms of, we were talking about, you know, family sometimes just not helping, or, you know, why can't you just get better, or what's wrong with you, are you really that sick, all of this stuff comes up there. And it seems like there's lots of folks right now who there's a new book coming out called Sick this year, written from the perspective of a woman who's a writer living with chronic disease. And it's precisely about how do we help cultivate a culture of empathy and understanding when we have these kind of, I don't know, medieval notions of what constitutes suffering. Like, you know, maybe if you're bleeding from the head or you have sores on your face, people go, oh, that person's sick. But, you know, there are so many people who are having an intense internal experience that's not necessarily manifesting in outward signs, you know?
Right. So many invisible illnesses.
Right. Exactly.
I'd really like to read that book.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'll talk about it on the show when I have the information written down. Sorry, it just came to me. I just remembered this.
It's such an interesting topic, though, because, I mean, for a long time now, people, you know, have been talking about how, you know, modern day diseases we're seeing just so much more autoimmunity.
Yeah.
And then, right, like, you know, tick-borne illnesses, like all of these things that are becoming more and more rampant and more confusing in terms of how to deal with them. And our medical establishment is not always on par. And then we have all these other alternative or complementary or just adjacent modalities that can work or at least support in some ways, but they're not seen by the medical establishment as always legitimate, or the access to them is different because a lot of them can't be accessed with health insurance, and sometimes that's the only way people can access healthcare. I don't know. It's just, it seems like it'll be, I'd be interested in that book and just like our modern times with our changing health needs and health issues and
how we conceptualize wellness and health is really majorly overdue for an overhaul.
Right. Yeah.
And I wanted to also say, in terms of, we were talking a little earlier about disability and disability benefits and classifications like that, and this sort of invisible illness issue really presents problems for folks because, well, I have a person in my family of origin who has a medical disability, and, you know, we have she has the plates and the little tag on the car, and I don't know how many times. So, you know, on a good day, maybe she doesn't use a walker or a stick or quote unquote look disabled. And, you know, but we will park in the handicapped parking. And I've had so many people say, she doesn't look handicapped. Why are you parking there? You know, and I mean, the plates on the car, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know,
people are so ignorant and they just always have to have something to say.
Yeah.
And
we
have this whole like culture shift. Culture building we need to do, where just like, empathy is building.
It also impacts, though, like, right, for folks getting support, like even being classified as having a disability when you have this internal experience going on that prevents you from being able to work a 40-hour work week.
Sure.
And it would be great if you could, you know, receive some assistance from the state so that you could live. Right. And yet, you know, you have this prejudice, then people aren't getting the benefits and support that they really rightfully have access to.
And then on a good day, you're like just trying to go to the grocery store and some homie in the parking lot reminds you of all your bad days.
Right.
Like you don't deserve that good day.
Right.
It's just, culture building. We have got to do better for each other.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting that you said that about the disability. That reminds me that we have a friend in the area a little south from here that ended up getting some disability for Lyme disease because he wasn't able to work a job and pay his bills for like a period of time because he was so ill. And he was initially diagnosed with or just misdiagnosed, right? So it was like this whole long path to try to figure out what it even was in the first place. But that's something that would be interesting, a little divergent, but a little interesting to maybe pick up on another show sometime around that. And if that's becoming more and more of something people have access to or not.
It would be great to do a show with some disability rights advocates too, because actually just talking about it now, I'm not even really clear on the whole process of how one accesses benefits and who, again, on the sort of medical freedom.
It generally takes a lawyer.
Right. Okay. That's what I've been told. It's like, but again, it's the issue of body sovereignty, right? Which overlaps with a lot of folks, you know, issues, as you were saying before. You know, who gets to make the decision what is abled and what is disabled or what is ability and what is disability? Right. That's pretty trippy to start thinking about, you know?
And that makes me wonder too, Heather, what can you tell us a little bit more about what this medical freedom movement looks like? Are there other people and other, you know, it's a little new to me. So I'm just curious.
At the grassroots stages right now, there's I've created a group on Facebook called Medical Freedom Advocates, and I've also started another group for New York State, which is Medical Freedom Advocates of New York.
Okay.
And they are linked together, so if Medical Freedom Advocates, there's a link in there to Medical Freedom Advocates of New York.
And those are both on Facebook. Those are groups on Facebook.
Those are both Facebook groups. I administer both of them. I've found another group out in Montana. There's Montanans for Medical Freedom. And they talk a lot about vaccine issues there. But they are also open to like the pain medicine issues and different medical freedom issues. So I wouldn't say it's really a movement yet or looks like anything. I'm trying to just bring people together from various walks of life, from women who want to have the right to choose, to parents who want to have the right to choose vaccines, to people who want to maybe change their sex. To people who want to have pain medicine because they're in pain. It's really, it boils down to having the say over your own body.
And can you tell us again when your WGXC show is? Let's do another plug for
that. I'm on
the
second Monday of every month from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Great. Thank you.
This
show is will be airing February 27th.
Yeah, it's the end of February. So
my next show
will be in March.
And
I think March and April, we're going to focus more on the chronic pain aspect on the show because we're in preparation of Pain Patients Advocacy Week.
Oh, that's right. So, and can you tell us what's going on for that week this year?
Well, there are protests going on all over the country. They usually do one in Washington, D.C. So I'll be trying to get something going in New York, probably something here in Hudson or in Albany.
Last year you were in Albany, right?
Yeah, I was in Albany and in Hudson.
Okay.
Great.
And will you be lobbying any particular legislators or anything like that?
Yeah,
is there any kind
letter,
of phone call campaign we could get in on?
Yes, letter writing and phone calling have always been a big part of the National Pain Patients Advocacy Week. We certainly have new people to contact this year. So
And have you found community here in Hudson as well? Or do y'all feel a little isolated in that? Or
Yeah, it's interesting because on Facebook there are some pretty large groups, but the people are spread all throughout the country.
Yeah.
Florida, ironically enough, seemed to be one of the states hardest hit by the regulations. So when you think of how many retirees, how many older people and people with health issues are living in Florida, that became a really big issue there. So there's still a lot of people in Florida. We have a lot of people in the western states from where we had come from. We kind of like collected people from one coast to the other that we made contact with. There are people in New York State who are affected by this, and that's part of the challenge, just trying to reach out for them. Some of them that I've met, like face-to-face, they don't have computers. They don't have access to the internet. So it's hard for a large percentage of the people affected to really be involved.
Right. And that's, you had mentioned that before, and it's good that you bring it up again. It's a really major, important point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are there any support groups or in-person meetings in this region that people can connect with on this topic?
I don't know. There probably are. There are, many support groups for various illnesses or conditions. Support groups might not actually be advocacy groups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a difference in focus there.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
And what's your, as we have a couple more minutes left here, but I'm kind of curious, like, what's your maybe personal, like, hope for this next year or moving forward in terms of?
Yeah. Well, my personal hope for this year, I do like seeing how people are more engaged with political issues right now. I find that very heartening that people are starting to kind of pay attention more and to think about becoming more active. So I think that's a good climate for the cause. I'm also a little bit hopeful about the new president because he's come out about the dangers of vaccines. And he's talked about regulating the pharmaceutical prices. And he wants to make some changes with the Obamacare. So I'm hoping that he makes the right decisions on those things.
One right thing, please. One. How about
At least one
right thing?
One would be got. One would be awesome.
Sorry. Yes, so, I hope he does the right thing there, too.
I mean, I think we need to stay kind of positive.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes,
absolutely.
To try to focus and try to manifest like what we want to see.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, there's a lot of what ifs and, oh, we could go that way and this way and that could be bad. But let's focus on kind of moving forward in the right way. At least that's how I'm
feeling
it
from you. I think that's great. I think that's great. I think it's a really important message right now. I think it's
for everyone to focus
self-care.
Yeah, focus on an issue and think positively about that issue and don't get into huge overwhelming abstract ideas, you know, really.
And
like,
medical freedom can be really uniting because it's something that affects virtually everyone.
That's right. Mm.
At any point in your life, you might be in a situation where you have to have some say over your own human body.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just actually, posted something about how I was personally treating myself on Instagram around HPV, which is something that people aren't talking about all that much, and certainly doctors don't. There's a lot of bullying into certain procedures. And it was... Yeah, it was one time where I really had to advocate to say no for a minor surgery that was being pressured. I felt bullied into it. And that bullying, first of all, I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't given any other options. There was no talking in the appointment. And I just knew that I needed to get out of there and find some resources. And then the bullying that I experienced both in the appointment and then the amount of phone calls I would get daily from the doctor's office made me even more sure I wanted to say no. Mm-hmm. And I just think, you know, from little to from small things to big things in terms of medical issues, there is a lot of like, oh, well, this is just how you do it. This is the one option and just go for it. Or a lot of bullying or a lot of just not being heard, not giving any other options. Mm-hmm. No time to talk.
Yeah.
Rush, rush, mm-hmm. rush. So I don't know. I know it's a different thing, but I'm just thinking about it in terms of medical freedom. You know?
Because what you're describing, I really think is an effect of this unbalance that we have, that medicine has become authoritarian.
Right.
Right.
That they're authority figures.
Right.
And
we're not.
We're not. Right. We're there to follow direction, to take orders.
Right.
And we're not being recognized as fellow experts. Sure. We should be treated as the expert in the individual body. The doctor has a wide variety of general knowledge, and you want to bring the two minds together and create a dialogue that generates some beneficial ideas.
Absolutely. And
thank you so much. Yeah. That was great. And now we're out of time.
Well, yeah. So thank you, Heather.
Thanks so much, Heather Martin, Medical Freedom.
Oh, amazing. We can listen to her show second Monday of every month from 2 to 3 p.m. And Roots Runners Rhizomes will be airing next on Monday, March 27th from 2 to 3 p.m. Heather, thank you once again.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.